The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features ensure that you can take on any adventure. What kind of features? Well, how about the available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud? Or the standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together? How about available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone? We're always trying to think about those great spring and summer getaways, but with a car like the Hyundai Santa Fe, anywhere can be your next adventure. To learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe, go to HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for complete details. The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive football stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at NewBalance.com.
Welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast with your hosts, Chip Patterson, Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott. It's your call for the best college football coverage from National Signing Day to the National Championship and everything in between. CBS Sports presents the Cover 3 Podcast.
And welcome back to the Cover 3 Podcast. Here on CBS Sports, that's Tom Fornelli, that's Danny Cannell, I'm Chip Patterson, coming to you live at youtube.com/cover3 and all across the 24/7 Sports Facebook network. Thanks for hanging out. Smash that subscribe, smash that like, and come and join us in the chat. So great to be back with you live. Our thanks to Bud Elliott, who is just continuing to grind on the summer school series. Those of you who have been enjoying it, especially Daniel in the chat, just want to give a big shout out to Bud for the awesome summer school series. Super informative and a must watch for college football junkies during the slow season. Awesome stuff. Keep up the great work. We will. Just a little gift for y'all in addition to our live hangouts. Lots to get to here on a Wednesday. Now we've got the SEC spring meetings underway. Great chance for us to be able to hear from some of the most prominent coaches in the entire sport. And of course, for an SEC that is going to be adding Texas and Oklahoma in the 2024 season, how do we get all these teams to play each other? We'll get into that and much more. But first, we've got some recent reporting from Dennis Dodd that is continuing comments that we even had going in the group chat, as Athletic Director Rick George has made it very clear that they are members of the Pac-12 now. And exploring any other opportunities, well, that falls under, what Athletic Director Rick George has said. You know, we have to do what is right for Colorado at the end of the day. He had some of those comments a few days ago, similar comments made to our own Dennis Dodd. Dennis's reporting indicates that Colorado has been in, quote, substantive talk with the Big 12 about possibly joining the growing league. A source with knowledge of the discussions tells CBS Sports multiple meetings in person to discuss the possibility of Colorado joining the Big 12. The Big 12 also has its spring meetings going on right now. Danny, when you're starting to, because you actually mentioned the Rick George quotes a few days ago, even before we had this recent reporting. So they're meeting in person. They're talking about potentially what might happen. What are you sensing out of the latest wave of conference realignment conversation?
So don't you feel like this is the first time there's been a little bit more willingness to embrace the possibility that it might include leaving the Pac-12? Like when he says we have to do what's in best interest of Colorado, that has not been what you've heard from other athletic directors or presidents of schools in the Pac-12. It's always been, don't believe what you read. You know, we're committed to the Pac-12. Let's, at least at the very least, a lot of them are saying, well, let's see what the rights deal looks like first. This is the first time it really feels like you've heard somebody say, no, we've got to do what's in the best interest of Colorado, which I think opens the door a little bit more to the very real possibility that they could leave. But I do think, like, you, like, it's a game of poker, right, that they're all playing right now. Because, and I think George Kliavkov has a really bad hand, right? And I think everybody kind of knows it. And Colorado's starting to show a little bit of their cards. Brett Yormark's already laid his down. He wants to be aggressive, right? He wants to try to acquire these, you know, however many schools he can get. So I just think it's the first time you've seen Colorado show a little bit of their hand that they'd be willing to listen.
Can I just start with the one thing from Dodd's story that really stood out to me?
Please.
Before we even get into the what Danny's saying, which is true. I mean, there has been some talk or some, like, reading between the lines of comments that have suggested it's the case. But I also think part of the reason Colorado is saying this is because Colorado is one of the Pac-12 teams getting interest from the Big 12. But the one thing in Dodd's story that really stood out to me when I was reading it that really caused me to raise my eyebrows and be like, what the hell? Colorado will not make this move without the support of Deion Sanders. Why the hell does your football coach have any say in what conference your program is going to be playing in? Like, I understand they've hired Deion. They've given him the keys to the program. They're hoping he can revitalize the program, and I get all that. But if Alabama wouldn't ask Nick Saban if it was okay if they could change conferences, like, Georgia's not asking.
Oh, yes, they would.
Well, no,
I disagree.
Why?
You don't think they would be there in 4 years? You don't think Bama would run it by, you don't think the president, the athletic director, and anybody else would run it by Nick Saban if he was cool with it?
Okay, maybe, but they're not leaving the SEC, so maybe that's a bad example. If this is, like, you know, any, why would you ask your football coach if it's okay to leave a conference? Like, this is a long-term deal. Deion Sanders is not going to be the coach at Colorado when they reap the rewards if they leave for the Big 12. He has absolutely no impact on that. So if I'm in charge of the school and it's like, all right, we're going to go to the Big 12, we're going to get more money, and then Deion's like, no, it's like, oh, okay, I guess we can't go because the guy I hired and whose career I'm in charge of said no. That makes no sense to me.
Bud Elliott joining the conversation. Bub, can you hear us?
You guys got me?
Yeah. For now. Yeah. What's up?
Is it that? Okay. My actual pod mic kept disconnecting it. I think Bama would ask Nick Saban, but I don't really think that they would make their decision based on what Saban says. Like, if they would ask him, hey, what do you think about this move? How would it be for us competitively? Any kind of downsides? Like, if you were a coach, would this make you not want to come coach here? Oh, no, you still make $12 million a year. We buy your house and do a life insurance thing and get you up to like $14 million. Okay, cool. Like, I thought it was a little crazy that they're consulting. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's true, that they're actually basing it on what Deion thinks, that's nuts. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's crazy to ask your coach.
Well, your coach is going to be responsible for recruiting. You want to find out what the recruiting impact is going to be when you go from the Pac-12 to the Big 12. You also,
not this coach.
Well, listen, you have already decided that you're going to move university standards in order to allow this coach to thrive. Like, this is already unusual, and not in an unusual bad way. It's just we've already been breaking the norms of the athletic director, university head football coach relationship. So this to me is just another layer of that.
Yeah, but you didn't make those. I mean, they made those changes because of Deion. I'm not arguing against that. But if you wanted your program to thrive under any coach, you probably needed to change those rules. And if you want your program to thrive long term because of financial reasons, it shouldn't be because you shouldn't need your head coach's full support. Now, publicly, maybe, you know, you want him to say he supports it, and well, maybe he doesn't agree with it. But like Bud said, you can ask him about it, but he shouldn't have any say in what you're going to do about it, like the full support of it. But it's, anyways, going back to, I guess, the original point, which is what Danny was talking about. Like, it is, I think the fact that Rick George and they're kind of saying this publicly is not the greatest sign for the Pac-12, because the other side of this is we've been hearing for months, you know, oh, the TV deal is going to be announced in a couple weeks. It's going to be announced a month from now. And every time that deadline comes, it gets pushed back another month to where now it's been, you know, in June, July. Well, tomorrow is June. Is there any rumblings of a TV deal being near? No, there are rumblings of Colorado's keeping its ears open for the Big 12. So I don't think it's a great sign for the Pac-12 television deals. Like Danny said, George Kliavkov was dealt a bad hand, and he's trying to make the best of it. But at some point, you know, you either lose all your chips or you fold. And I think that's kind of where things are headed.
Does Colorado need another partner? Is Colorado the first school, or does Colorado get grouped in with someone else? Is the fact that Colorado is out here on the forefront of the conversations, and we are not hearing as much from Utah, we are not hearing as much from Arizona, and we are not hearing as much from Arizona State, does that mean that they are more likely to go? Because we have grouped the quote-unquote four corner schools together, but there is not as much, you know, momentum, at least in terms of the conversation, behind those other three as there is with Colorado.
They could bring them in separate. Where are they? They're at what, 14 now?
Correct.
I don't know if going to 15 would work. I would think you'd want a 16th, but they're still talking. You know, there were the rumors of when we were gone last week. There were rumors that they're interested in UConn, which, okay, great. That's always a great sign for the Big 12. But I just, it could be UConn. It could be the Gonzaga thing that they're doing for basketball, or that wouldn't be football. I don't know. I do think that it's still going to be the four schools that they're going after. Colorado probably wouldn't make the move without a partner. I don't know if the Big 12 would make the move without the partner. So I don't know. But the fact that you aren't hearing anything from Arizona or Utah doesn't make me think that there isn't stuff going on. I just think that right now with Deion in Colorado, that entire program is on display. Like, everything they're doing is a documentary for the most part. So it's going to be hard to kind of keep these things under wraps.
Don't you think if you're Yormark, you take one just to try to pressure the others if you have to, if that's the only option? Yeah, I think so too. Because then it's going to diminish their rights deal. Like, without one less school, they're going to get a weaker if you can get it done before that deal is on the table, before they see the offer, it's going to weaken that. So yeah, I think he would take Colorado, hoping to be the first domino.
When Missouri and Nebraska left the Big 12 and Colorado, they didn't go together. Obviously, they went to different places, but wasn't it a trickle effect? Like, one, then the other, then the other? I you know, it was a long time ago in, you know, college football world, but what's y'all's memory of that? I was trying to put that into perspective here on the fly.
Nebraska was the first one, right? And then Mizzou, and then Colorado? I can't remember. Like, it all blends together. Yeah.
Because the Pac-12 added Colorado, while they also picked up Utah from the Mountain West. And, I mean, Utah's the other one that seems to make sense. I don't know. I'm admitting my ignorance. What is the Utah-BYU relationship at the administrator level? I mean, obviously,
it's a holy war.
Among the fans. But I'm saying, like, is there any reason why BYU would be uniquely motivated to keep Utah out?
I don't know.
I think it makes a good travel partner, and then you make it a, you know, like a annual rivalry game. But I'm not in Salt Lake City. I don't wear those colors. I don't understand what that relationship is like. But that's the other one where, to me, Colorado and Utah, bang bang, makes sense. Colorado comes home. Utah is a travel partner for BYU. You expand so that you are still at 14 teams even after Texas and Oklahoma leave. You probably have your eyes on two more so that you can get to 16 and match the Big Ten and the SEC. I think that that is the end game for the Big 12. They want to have 16 teams. They want to be able to say that they've got as many teams as those other two conferences and, you know, piece it together, or market it as best they can. So that would be my prediction of where this ends. I just don't know when.
You said Colorado comes home. And I think that's interesting because there has been the aspect of this of Colorado returning to the Big 12. The Big 12 Colorado would be returning to will look nothing like the Big 12 that Colorado left. Like, when Colorado was last in the league, they were in the North Division. The other teams in the North Division were Mizzou, Nebraska, Kansas State, and Iowa State. Only three of those teams remain. In the South, there was Texas A&M, and Oklahoma. They're all gone. So they'd be, quote-unquote, coming home, but it's like returning in your 30s because you got divorced and you're moving back in with your parents and your dad has turned your bedroom into like his man cave. So like, you've returned home, but it is not the home you remember.
If you were George, if you were Deion, wouldn't you say we got to go to the Big 12? Or is there any chance you would say, man, let's stay in the Pac-12, it's more winnable you know, or from a football competitive standpoint. I just don't think I'm trying to play devil's advocate and look at the case for staying in the Pac-12. I just don't know if there is one. That's why I think
Pac-12
is dead. You know, like that's where I don't think. Oh, is it winnable? Not with Oregon and Washington in it. But if they bounce, yeah, then it is.
Well, yeah, for sure.
Currently, the way it sets up, your competition, if you stay in the Pac-12 to win a conference championship, is going up against Oregon and Washington after USC and UCLA leave. In the Big 12, your toughest competition to win a conference championship after Texas and Oklahoma leave is what?
Well, also Utah.
And Utah, correct.
Right. Sorry. I have blue chip ratio coming out on Monday.
Oh, nice.
There is not a top 25 team in blue chip ratio in the new Big 12. There's not a team that is, there's not a team in the new Big 12 that is three good recruiting classes away from being a national title level team.
Wow. Is there one from the, is it Oregon? Would Oregon be in there? That'd be the one from the new.
Oregon's in. Washington is closer than any Big 12 team. Utah is roughly about as good as any Big 12 team that way. Like, the Big 12 is not a national title producing conference. I think it's much easier than the Big 12 than the new Pac-12, personally, if you're trying to win the whole thing.
Right.
Now, the depth in the Big 12 is pretty good.
Because there's not a bottom. There, like, your bottom in the Big 12 is going to be talking about the new additions and West Virginia, right, Kansas, sort of still competent.
Meanwhile, like,
programs.
I have no idea if Stanford's ever going to be back, given what the portal's done to them, what they've not been able to do through the portal. So,
very interesting. Well, we will, of course, keep tabs on it. And, of course, our thanks to the Dodd Father for keeping us up to date with all the latest. And coming up on the other side, is Kirk Ferentz the AD now? Is he the captain now? We'll get into that and more takeaways from the SEC spring meetings next.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Sevilla have conjured magic on the way to a seventh Europa League final, where they face European trophy specialist Jose Mourinho and his experienced Roma side in Budapest. It's today, Wednesday. Catch the Europa League final this Wednesday. Coverage begins at 2 p.m. Eastern time on CBS Sports Network and streaming live as you've been following Europa League and all the European competition on Paramount Plus. Again, that is this Wednesday. Sevilla, Roma, the Europa League final. Coverage starts at 2 p.m. Eastern time. You can watch it on CBS Sports Network or stream it on Paramount Plus. Tom, is anybody healthy for Roma right now? Oh, you're muted.
Tom pulled a bud.
Yeah. Yeah, they've had a lot of injury and availability issues over there in Roma. We'll see what their sort of lineup they're going to be able to trot out in Budapest.
I would like to point out, I did not mute my mic.
Ooh.
I don't know what's going on. You know the ad we just went to? I'm hearing that in my ears right now.
Okay.
So we got, I don't know what's going on here.
We're messing with the first day back in a while. You know, it's been 10 days.
StreamYard, man. Telling you, like, StreamYard yesterday was giving me tons of problems. Like, StreamYard folks, we're going to need a refund. Bro, this is a CBS one. The 24/7 one. I finally got a corporate card, so I guess I'm not fronting the bill this year.
But let's start with you, Bud. So with Gary Barta announcing his retirement, I just thought it was interesting to consider that Kirk, you have long detailed Kirk Ferentz's hold on the state of Iowa, taxpayer money and otherwise. Do you see this as the beginning of the end, that a change in leadership might be able to expedite the force or the pressure should Kirk Ferentz start to see this tenure winding to a close? Because he's not going to coach there forever. So do you think that the change in athletic director is the beginning of the end for the Ferentz tenure?
I don't think it prolongs his tenure, but I'm not really ready to say that it is the beginning of the end. I think there are very few athletic directors out there who actually get to solo make the call on a hire fire of a coach. It's generally understood this thing's not going to get turned around. The boosters are in agreement with it. The coach has lost the support of the boosters, blah, blah, blah. Kirk Ferentz, got to say it correctly, is somebody who I think has a lot of booster support. Obviously, like, there's no way you could get away with doing what you've been doing if you didn't have a lot of boosters who supported you. And so it's hard to answer this question without knowing if the boosters that support, Kirk Ferentz, are going to give the AD their type of support to make the moves that he wants to make. Do you think Gary Barta retired because he didn't want to have to fire Brian at the end of the season?
Yeah,
he didn't want to have to deal with that? Or do you think he's just done?
Isaac in the chat, bold of you to assume Iowa isn't working on a way to make Ferentz live forever. That is, obviously you've got to consider this. Not that he would be afraid, to answer your question, not that he would be afraid to fire Kirk Ferentz, but I could see Gary Barta, after his extended tenure with the program, just not wanting to go through it. Just not wanting to have to deal with that.
I know we approach this from the football angle, but there have also been a lot of problems in that athletic department that Gary Barta oversaw, with like settlements for sexual assault, I believe, cases in other sports. So I don't know that this is, and I feel bad. I'm not 100% sure it's sexual assault, so I'm taking that back. I can't remember what the cases were, but there have been multiple things that they have settled and they have spent millions. Patrick Vint, who used to do Black Heart Gold Pants and now is at Go Iowa Awesome, was detailing them on Twitter when the Barta news was announced last week. I think that's got a whole hell of a lot more to go with Gary Barta no longer being the athletic director there than anything Kirk Ferentz has done. I mean, Kirk Ferentz has booster support because he's won a whole hell of a lot of games over a long time at Iowa. So we can hate the way that they do their offense, but it's hard to argue that they haven't been successful on the football field. So I don't know what this means for Ferentz in the long term. I think he's probably still the most powerful person in that athletic department. If Colorado wants to go to the Big 12, they would probably need Kirk Ferentz's permission. So I think that it's going to be interesting to see who the hire is that replaces Barta. Maybe Kirk Ferentz takes the job. Maybe Kirk Ferentz steps down at the end of the year, becomes the athletic director, and then Brian becomes the head coach.
Oh, please. That's like 1970s college football athletic departments all over again, where the head coach is like, I'm done coaching, but I still want to be around and walk around on the sidelines during practice. Danny, how did this news hit you?
Probably the same way you guys are. I don't know if it has a big impact on Ferentz's job security. I mean, I think you got to be careful. I think it's just kind of tired of the same. But the same has been pretty dang good, you know, like
8-9 wins.
Be Nebraska, you know, who cycled through four coaches. You could all, you know, like, you just, it's not an easy place to win. He's found a way to win. I think the pressure, maybe it puts a little bit of more pressure on his son if he doesn't obtain some of those goals. But the big picture, I don't know. I also, the other thing too, I mean, Iowa was one of these schools. I just wonder too, we've heard about coaches getting out of the game, you know, going to the NFL, the NIL. I wonder at what point too administrations are nervous about what the future holds if we do go to a different landscape.
I don't want to, it sounds like too many headaches. I don't want to have to learn new tricks. I'm just, let somebody else come in here and take over. I'm going to go ahead and take my millions and go.
I want to clarify, it was not sexual assault. I will read you under Gary Barta at Iowa. This is from, again, Patrick Vint. Paid $6.2 million to the field hockey coach to settle discrimination claim. Paid $4.2 million to former players to settle discrimination claim. Paid $200,000 to a track coach to settle discrimination claim. Killed off four programs he wanted to kill for years during a global pandemic. In the course of his three discrimination settlements, Gary Barta allegedly discriminated against a homosexual woman and her partner, a group of black football players, and a white guy, which is like, oh, the United Colors of Benetton of discrimination. Anyways, there's a whole hell of a lot going into this that's not just, you know, it's got nothing to do with the football program. It's got a lot to do with everything else.
And I would clarify that my question is more, okay, there's new leadership in charge. I'm not well suited to look at Gary Barta's tenure and grade it. Right. Like that's just not something that I've got. But I do know that Barta was Team Ference, and that if you have somebody new in there, that at least introduces a little wrinkle to it. One more little news since the last time we caught up in person. We've got, is it the success incentive, the success initiative, or the success incentive initiative for the ACC? As we have decided that schools will be paid out. They are still going to get the same check evenly for regular season games. But when the money comes into the conference based on postseason success and revenue sports, men's basketball, women's basketball, bowl games, and the college football playoff, that money will be dispersed to the schools that have been responsible for the money coming into the conference, more or less. Is this something that, Danny, is this something that you, I know we talked about it on the radio show a little bit, but is this something that you see as a positive step forward for the conference?
It's a temporary Band-Aid. I mean, that's kind of what it keeps people happy in the short term, but it still doesn't close that gap of 30 to 40 million, an extra 10 million. It helps, but it doesn't fill that gap. So I feel like it's just a temporary fix. You know, we talked to Mike Elko at Duke, and he was great. He's a great personality because he doesn't hold back. He just kind of shoots from the, he just speaks his mind, which I really appreciated. Awesome. He had an interesting comment because I asked him about the ACC and that gap, and he had the mindset. He's like, what more can you do? He's like, look at the facilities around the ACC, the SEC, and you know, he's like, what more can you spend on to make the players like that much? But he did have a caveat. He said, as long as it doesn't become a part of the NIL pool, you know, like as long as it's not going to the players, then we'll all be fine. And I think that might be the biggest issue that could impact the long-term viability is if that TV money does start to go directly to the players, that's when you're dead as the ACC. So I think it's a temporary fix. I think it kind of kicks the can down the road, but ultimately it all comes down to, you know, what does the landscape of college athletics look like? And I do wonder if that type of change, if the SEC or Big Ten do come in and they, who knows if they're going to be forced to do it or if they actually do it, but that's when you kind of see Armageddon. And that's when I think you could see, you know, the ACC forced to break up.
I think this is good for Mike Alford to go back to the board and say, hey, got something done, right? FSU's AD and a couple of these other ADs as well. Danny's exactly right. It's a very short-term Band-Aid. All these ADs know the players are going to become employees sooner rather than later, and they will be getting a cut of it. I think they like the thing is, it doesn't bother you if you're like the coach at Duke because they're not going to be playing in that space. They're not trying to win a national title, right? There's like 20 teams out there that that sell their boosters on the idea of playing for a national title if they do everything right. Okay. There's like three of those teams in the ACC. That's it. Mm-hmm. The other 11 don't Boston really College, care Syracuse. Competing on that level. Right, exactly, and Wake. So, I think this is very short term. It also lets you paint that if you take care of business, if you're Clemson or Florida State, you win your league and you're going to the playoff, right, and you're still falling that much farther behind, it allows you to sort of paint the narrative, hey, we did all this stuff. We got the incentives. We're still $40 or $50 million short. This is why we got to go.
Go ahead, Tom.
I've got nothing new to say about all this. This is a Band-Aid on a bullet wound. Like, it's Florida State's going to be getting extra money if it makes the playoff. Clemson's going to be getting extra money if it makes the playoff, which is good for them. And you can argue that it's deserved if you want, but they're still going to be making as much as the 5-7 team in the SEC in the Big Ten, if even that. You know what I mean? So, like, or they'll still be making less. So,
less.
Yeah. So those teams will be passing them up. And in an age where NIL is going to matter more and more, you can't really afford to be falling behind. So while this kind of settles things and maybe calms the people down for a little bit, a couple years down the road, it's still going to be a huge problem. Like, this conference is in very real trouble unless it somehow gets a new television deal. And I don't see that coming anytime soon, because I don't, just based on the way the networks, like their deals with ESPN, based on like ESPN's history, now there's new leadership in charge, so you can't really say that that's how it's going to go. But ESPN has always seemed more interested in making bigger, better conferences than helping fix current conferences, if you catch my drift.
The ACC has been operating at a deficit to the biggest conferences at the highest levels of college sports for a while now. In the 90s and in the early 2000s, it was the most profitable. But guess what? The value of football has gone through the roof. The value of college basketball has diminished. And now all of a sudden, specifically in the BCS era, where the ACC, as I've said before, went 2-13 in BCS bowl games. Florida State won a title in 99. Florida State won a title in 2013. And every other time the ACC sent its conference champion to the Orange Bowl, they tripped over their feet and lost to Stanford, or they lost to Louisville. And that fermented a reputation that not even two Clemson national championships and a couple Heisman trophies were going to be able to really reverse. And the ACC's value dropped. But the ACC was operating at a deficit when Clemson went to six straight college football playoffs and when Clemson made the national title game four times and won two national titles. I think if you are trying to close the gap entirely, then you're not even being realistic to where you've been before. And if you've been able to get to the top of the mountain before, then, and I guess the point about if this TV money is then going to players, then you're not going to be able to afford to keep up. You're going to become what? The Oakland A's or the Pittsburgh Pirates. You know, if that's what you're afraid of, I guess that is a different conversation. But in the, like, how much more is more, circling back to the Mike Elko point, the ACC has not been the wealthiest conference in college sports for quite some time. It's nice to be able to break off a little bit more to the teams that are bringing it in. But I think trying to close the gap is not even being realistic about where you are.
I'd be thrilled if the gap just remained what it was. Or what it is currently, Chip. I think they're trying to future-proof this thing to a certain extent, because the gap is set to grow exponentially, right? Like, yeah. Nobody's arguing that they can't compete right now. 6 or 7 years from now, you know, then, yeah, that's totally. And if you watched Alford's full address to the board about 3 months ago, to the point of, like, are these ADs conscious of this stuff? He definitely mentioned the likelihood that players become employees. Like, the Carolyn Egan, their general counsel, briefed the board on it following him, and they talk about ongoing athletics cases, the NLRB, and all that stuff. So I think they're very aware of it. When we did the episode and had Matt Brown and the legal experts on, they thought within 4 to 5 years, the guys are definitely employees. So, like, that's where they're all going.
That would be 2028, I guess.
Yeah.
And you'd still have 8 years in the TV deal.
Oh, man. Hey, speaking of ESPN, speaking of conferences, the SEC moving from an 8-game to a 9-game conference schedule, it would make sense, as we discussed here on a very fun show of trying to build a 9-game SEC conference schedule, it would allow some of these schools to be able to play each other all the time. It would make some schools' schedules more difficult, and it also might have a value to ESPN. So we're going to dive into the 8-game, 9-game schedule debate and much more from the SEC spring meetings going on right now in Destin.
Next.
Paramount Plus and the National Park Foundation present A Mountain of Zen. Are you still listening? Good. Take a deep breath. You needed a break. This Earth Week, you can live stream 7 national parks for 7 days on Paramount Plus. So, yes,
you can literally stream a stream. Paramount Plus, official streaming partner of the National Park Foundation.
Check out our new NBA show, Beyond the Arc, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network, where you can find me, John Gonzalez, NBA insider Bill Reiter, and Ashley Nicole Moss, 5 days a week talking all things NBA. Whether you're looking for insightful discussions, upbeat commentary, breaking news, interviews, or coverage of all the biggest stories in the NBA, our new show is the place to be 5 days a week. Download and follow Beyond the Arc on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Back here on the Cover 3 podcast. Yeah, there's a lot to chew on coming out of SEC spring meetings. You know, there is the field storming, court rushing conversation that we have addressed earlier on the Cover 3 podcast. You know, there is sort of under the radar a little bit of an NIL discussion, especially with some of the states within the SEC's footprint passing new laws that have allowed the NIL operations to become a little bit more in-house and maybe even protect them from any kind of NCAA enforcement. And frankly, that's too much for me to be able to untangle right now. I'm going to wait until we get some more expert advice from Matt Brown and others on that one. But what I do understand is the 8-game versus 9-game schedule debate, because the SEC is about to move from a 14-team league into a 16-team league. And that's going to happen in 2024, which means they got to figure this out like now or next week or very, very soon at the least. So what are, in your mind, like, Danny, in your mind, what are the big sticking points or what stands out to you within the 8-game, 9-game schedule debate, as we've heard from coaches and athletic directors on all sides of this? What seems to be the really important and difficult point to get everybody on the same page?
It's a good question. So I thought it was done. Like, I thought it was just going to, because it made so much sense and we did the schedules. Not that it was done, but like it was a pretty safe assumption to believe that's where we're headed. Now, I do think some of the pushback that you would get from Sankey and from the higher ups is what we always hear about the SEC. Well, that's going to be so hard, man. That's just a gauntlet. We have the toughest conference in the land. We'll have teams with three and, you know, our best teams could have 2 and 3 losses just because they're playing against each other. And so it's built in this kind of mechanism that says, do we really want to bang heads against each other and prevent multiple teams from being in the playoff? That was the way I read it, was that, and this is a genius move until somebody prevents you from doing it this way. Why wouldn't you make your schedule easier so that you have more bowl eligible teams, more teams in the playoff every year? You present, you know, you have more 10 win teams because you have 4 non-cons, 2 or 3 are pretty easy, and it kind of helps the overall strength of the conference. That's what I think why they would go against it would be the preservation of what they've been doing, and it's worked really well for them.
Well, there are some forward thinkers here. According to Sports Illustrated's Ross Dellinger, Florida, Georgia, Texas A&M, LSU, and Missouri are schools that support a 9-game schedule model. I think that Greg Sankey does too. Mm-hmm. And what he is hearing is pushback from people that say, "What we should get more money if we are going to play one more game." And that's where I'm not your good media watch guy. But that's where it would be not the best look for ESPN in the midst of a summer of layoffs to all, and also bidding on other media rights, big bids that are going to be coming up soon, for them to also go back in and reopen a deal, which, according to my understanding, has no language that says we get more money for a 9-game conference schedule. It can be reopened for more money for new teams, but moving to a 9-game conference schedule does not automatically trigger higher payouts for some of these schools. That's where the Sankey quote is, the money, we don't follow the money follows us. We need to be on the forefront of this, which to me is a little bit of like, look, ESPN, they set us up. They don't want Alabama against UT Martin. They want Alabama against a conference opponent because those home games were going to be on their airways. This is about increasing the product for your media rights partner, and another conference game is going to be much more attractive and rate better than whatever you are going to have from the non-conference schedule.
That's BS, if that's actually how they feel. Because when they were negotiating with ESPN, was the 8 and 9 game conference schedule never brought up? We're supposed to believe that nobody ever thought of the idea that, hey, we're going to 16 teams. Maybe we're going to expand the schedule by a game. Of course that was brought up. That's crap. Here's what's happening. Nick Saban for years has been going, saying we should play 9 games. We should play 9 games. We should play 9 games. Suddenly he finds out one of his protected rivalries is going to be against LSU. And now he's like, I don't think we should play 9 games. We should stick at 8 and I'll just play Auburn every year and we'll rotate everybody else. And then there are the bottom half of the league who just want to keep going to bowl games. You want to make more money by playing an extra conference game? You will. You know why? Because you'll stop having to pay $1 million to an FCS team to come to your campus every year. So you'll save $1 million every year and you'll play an SEC team instead. There, you've made more money. Stop being babies. Just do it.
I think Tom's right on this. By the way, happy birthday, my son, Liam. Thanks for watching at home.
Liam.
Throw the 4 is up. Is there any chance that, do you guys remember when the Big 12 tried to sue ESPN for breaking its conference up?
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like, and how the SEC couldn't be the ones that were bringing over Oklahoma and Texas. And so the Big 12's theory was that ESPN basically is the one that did the deal here. Is there any chance that Sankey told ESPN it'd be 9 games? And it's like, look, Saban's on board. 9 games, of course. You can't really have a 16-team league with 9 games without fully checking.
Oh, that would be incredible.
With the membership. Is there any chance this is not a money play? Is there any chance that Greg Sankey wrote some checks verbally that the rest of the league isn't ready to cash?
Look at the reports about Kevin Warren and the Big Ten's TV deal, right?
That's exactly what I'm thinking here, right? Like,
come on, guys, you know we're going to 9.
Yeah.
You hear it? Come on. Like, of course we're going to be going to 9. Like,
maybe the reason the deal got done was an understanding.
Yeah, like
that they would be going to 9 games.
Yeah, the SEC is paying all that money for the reason. Like, they want SEC games, and they could sit again. They're crying. They just want. They're afraid they're going to miss bowl games, and they're afraid that's going to lead to coaches getting fired. But here's the other thing. Bowl games are going to become more and more meaningless every single year with the playoff anyway. Like, going to a bowl game is not going to save your coach. Like, going 6-6 is like, oh, well, we got to keep them. We won half our games.
But you know what's even more valuable? Getting 3 or 4 SEC teams into the playoff.
Mm-hmm. But you will. You're going to get 3 SEC teams in every year no matter what.
He said I did not see this quote. So listen, let me be reckless as we tend to be here on the Cover 3 podcast on May 31st. But it's like he had some analytical model retrofit that is like, if we had had a 9-game conference schedule, here's what your records would have been. We wouldn't have had a big change in your bowl eligibility. We wouldn't have had a big change in your college football playoff contention. Like, and then he adds on the, and remember the pandemic? Wasn't that great? Which, excuse me, sir. But he was like, the 10-game conference schedule, this was what our fans loved. You know, we only got to play each other, and this is the greatest thing that could happen. It's a lot of push from one of the most powerful people in college athletics, and it's interesting to me that he might not get his way. My prediction here is that they go to an 8-game conference schedule the first year with Texas and Oklahoma. It is 1 permanent rival, 7 rotating rivals, and they do that for a couple years, maybe even the first 2 years of the college football playoff, and it's not until we get the next college football playoff contract that we start to see a full reconfiguration of the conference.
If they stick to 8 games, the C in SEC stands for cowards, period.
Yeah.
Flip it. For sure.
What do y'all think? How do you think this ends?
9 games. I think it's a whole lot of saber rattling. I think Saban's trying to get an easier protected rivalries, which, going back to what we were doing on the show when we did our SEC protected rivalries, that was one of the things I was arguing. Alabama's not going to want those 3 teams. But ESPN and the SEC would. So Saban's trying to get out of one of those games. I think that they would settle for LSU, Auburn, and getting rid of Tennessee. I don't know, but he's trying to get an easier opponent. Maybe that's one of the things. If you get Saban on board, I think that's enough votes, is it not? Because you mentioned some of the schools that are already on board with a 9-game schedule. So I think you've just kind of got to flip Nick, and maybe Nick, you know, he's friends with Joe Manchin. He understands the importance of leverage and power of being a deciding factor in a vote. And he's learned some lessons, and he's using that right now to get what he wants. And then they will go to the 9-game schedule.
Over under 1.5 seasons on how long they play 8 games.
Over.
Under.
Over.
Under. Okay. I could see him doing it. I could see him doing it for 1 year, capitalizing on the excitement of bringing Texas and Oklahoma in. ESPN be like, Greg,
get it done. Dance, monkey,
what
dance.
You said, bro.
That's what my buddy Joe Gilio said. Joe Gilio said this is the Ovius and Gilio fantastic podcast. If you want to voyeuristically awesome look pod, in man. On Triangle Media, he said this is the dance monkey dance moment that ESPN threw out the symbols and was like, all right, come on. We backed it up, you know, we let all this happen. You know, now it's time for you to pay up on this. I think it's two because that actually does let you cycle through. That you do two because it's the 1 and the 7 and then the 1 and the other 7.
All right. If I said it 2, you can't push. You're going over or under?
Under.
Three more likely?
No. No, because that's where the expansion of, like, I would not be surprised if the new college football contract expands again, that if they push it out to 16, and then the idea that you've got a 3-loss SEC team is not a big deal because those extra at-large bids that would come with an expansion from 12 to 16 are going to the SEC and the Big Ten.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need a vote on this from the league? Like, is it actually in the bylaws that the league members have to vote on this, or are they taking the temperature and then Greg Sankey decides?
Not sure.
Where's Brandon Marcello? He's there.
That's actually something we need to.
This is a great Brandon question. I'm going to count on him.
I'm going to text Brandon right now, actually.
They didn't teach me SEC voting rules and civics in 8th grade. I only know the government. Let's see. They need 2/3 approval. What do they need for veto power? I don't know. Does Stanky get a veto? Because that could be it right there. Well, he's like, yeah, we're going to do what I want.
Yeah, I think it is. Kick it down the line. You spend 2 years where everybody gets to see everybody. And then when the new college football playoff contract starts, which probably involves ESPN and more opportunities for money and yada, 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 that sort of allows for yet another reset. I mean, Big Ten still hasn't figured out what it's going to do with USC and UCLA either. So we got a lot to figure out from the scheduling front. That is not the only headlines that we've had coming out of the SEC spring meetings. What has stood out? You know, we've had some Eli Drinkwitz making headlines. That wasn't on my bingo card for this week. What stood out from some of the comments we've had from some of the coaches?
That one. We have it, right? We can hear it.
Oh, producer Jordan, we got it? All right, let's roll it.
We see issues in gambling arising. What's your approach with your team about that issue? And is there an element of surprise, or was that just kind of inevitable in your mind?
Y'all really are trying to get me in trouble here. There's just not enough. I mean, we're trying to give. Actually, Deion Sanders had a really good quote the other day talking about young men are joining a business, but we want to treat them like kids. We're giving guys 18, 19, 20, 21, 22-year-old life-changing money. People are making more money in NIL than my brother-in-law, who's a pediatrician who saves lives. And we kind of do it cavalier, and we think that there's not going to be any side effects or there's not going to be issues. I mean, there's information out there. There's bad actors out there always trying to make a dollar. They're involved in running around campuses trying to gather information. Like, I think it's going to become one of the key issues that we face in our locker rooms. I mean, the NFL's faced it more high profile than I've seen it in the last 15 years, in the recent 2 years. So I think it's more prevalent because there's more money involved. And everybody's looking for a quick way to make a dollar. And so, I've been known to play blackjack myself. So, it's a tough deal. And like I said, these young men are getting a lot of money that is a lot right now. And there's not, other than trying to hand out advice and provide some parameters to it. We talk about in recruiting, you recruit your own problems. With this NIL situation, we've created our own problems in college sports.
Mm.
Marcello hit me back, by the way, and said that, they actually do have to vote. The athletic directors vote on Thursday. The presidents would vote on Friday morning. Sankey cannot break the tie. Vote fails if a tie. And they have to reintroduce the proposal, vote until there's not a tie, pretty much. Simple majority, 8-6.
Same as Joe Manch.
Mike Fly would have never stood for this.
Yeah, all right. So, Danny, back to Trinkwitz.
So he was getting skewered, right? And I think you can tell where a coach is on the hot seat by how quickly he responds. Did you see him take right to Twitter after? It was like 45 minutes later. Yes. He's like, I am not against NIL, even though every coach deep down inside feels exactly the way he does. Like, they don't like the problems that it brings to you. I thought they were blown up a little bit. I think some of those concerns are valid, but my goodness, is it easy to absolutely skewer you when you make about 10, 15 times as much as the pediatrician who's saving kids' lives? Like, that's where it looks awful. Like, you should have just kept that one out of your mouth and everything else would have been okay. You know what? He brings up some good points, but the hypocrisy that it looks like when you compare the players making more, but not yourself. Like, it just, that was why it was so easy to rake him over the coals.
Football coaches.
I want to see the brothers text to him. Like, you know, his brother's blowing him up, right? Like, you saw him texting there on the podium. If you guys are watching us live on YouTube, youtube.com/cover3, like and subscribe. Like, he's texting during the middle of the question. Are we even sure Eli listened to the question? Or are you just like, okay, yeah, gambling, they have more money now. All right. If I'm Eli's brother, a pediatrician saving lives, I'm like, bro, you paid $1 million per win. Like, you're a replacement level coach at Missouri. You're literally like mid as well. You do exactly. Roughly about within the expectation range, never better, never really worse. You're playing out the deal. You got one extension. Oh, like dude, you don't save lives. Like, you know, Eli's brother better be ripping the hell out of him over text. I don't know. He's probably not watching live because he's saving lives. But if he did, it'd be fun to see the phone blow up there. I got to jump in right after this. Go over to 24/7 Sports YouTube channel. We're doing a transfer portal review show with the new ranking. So. I'll see you guys. I got to go do sound check over there.
Later. I will just say, like, I agree. Like, the way he made his point was not the best way, but I think overall he's not against NIL. He's against how it's just the Wild West right now and there really aren't any regulations and there needs to be better ways, not just, you know, because these kids are making too much damn money, but to prepare these kids for what to do with their money. And I think that's something that we're dealing with, not just in college football. I think that's been a problem in like our education system for a while. Like when we were in school, they didn't teach us anything about finances. Like you had to go to college to study that. So it's like, I just feel like these are basic things that when you're 18 years old, you're not really prepared for. And all of a sudden you're getting like a $250,000 deposit in an account. You don't know what the hell to do with that money. So I think, yeah, there's bad actors, there's all that, but I just think that I think the overall point he's trying to make is that we need to figure out something, which I don't know that we ever will. We might just have to play it by ear the entire time, but I don't know. It's hard when you go from 0 to 60 like that.
But haven't we learned, like, this was a big criticism of the NBA when they let players come out of high school go straight, oh, they're too rich too soon. They're too young to understand what it takes. When I would argue, yeah, there's some issues that you have to deal with, right? You have bad actors out there that are trying to maybe, you know, charge you 30% on what you're making or whatever it is. But aren't those issues a lot better than what these kids are dealing with coming out from the neighborhood they are and then and the other issues that they could have where there are legitimate bad actors that are trying to do way worse things than to overcharge you or, you know, take some of your money away from you? Like, that's where I kind of like, haven't we learned from the criticism of other sports? I don't love it. Trust me. I think there's a lot of jealousy too. I mean, I don't love the fact that there's an 18-year-old that could be making $8 million to go to Tennessee. I'm like, man, we're here, you know, working our tails off. Can't we get some love? It's just life's not fair. And everybody has to be more okay with accepting that.
18-year-olds going on guys' trips to Greece, you know, while we're sitting here working. Can you imagine?
That's right.
Like, I mean, like you're saying, though, like money, suddenly having money will not fix everything for you, but it does provide easier path to things that will help fix problems for you.
Right. Like I saw Joel Klatt said, you know, this is going to lead to mental health issues. which maybe it does. I don't know. I mean, maybe there's some, you know, because, and I'll say this from a personal standpoint, I had a hard time dealing with life after the NFL. Like all of a sudden when you stop making $1 million, it's tricky. And what do you do with your life? But again, that problem is a lot easier to solve and address than some of the problems that some of these players are having to face if they never had this money on the table.
Yeah, the jump from gambling to NIL was interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I am curious about the gambling impact. Like, I think that could be, I think we're at the tip of the iceberg of what potentially we could see this fall if they start, you know, enforcing it the way they have already at Iowa, Iowa State, Bama, baseball. The NFL has come down hard. Like, could you imagine? I mean, the baseball coach at Alabama got fired because of a gambling scandal. Could you imagine if that, not even to say Saban, but any Power Five coach was fired because of a gambling controversy, which is not that outside of the realm of possibility.
Not surprising also that the alpha nerd admitted that he likes to play blackjack. That guy counts cards. Yeah. There's no question. Yeah. That guy sees all the numbers.
He said, I'm banned. He should have been like, I'm not allowed to play anymore.
Yeah, I'm so good at that. Yeah, no shock there. Also, and I mentioned this earlier, this is something that, again, I haven't really wrapped my head around, but I understand it's significant. But Missouri is one of the states that has new NIL legislation, which allows a high school athlete to get NIL money before they're even on campus. And I don't know if I've got this last part right. If they commit to an in-state school, Eli Drinkwitz, and by the way, Eli Drinkwitz, when the law was passed, I think he retweeted it and he said, this is a quote game changer. Like, he is very much excited about the way that the state of Missouri is making it easier for Missouri football to compete in the NIL landscape. It is laws like what is happening in the state of Missouri that has college football coaches and athletic directors in other states worried that it's an uneven playing field. And the SEC is one place where it's really happening. For him to be critical of NIL, that was a little bit of a surprise to me.
My initial response to that was, ooh, this should make it easier for Illinois to recruit East St. Louis, because that's in Illinois. It's not in Missouri. So there's a lot of talent in that area. So, hey, guys, you can't get that money like your friends over there on the other side of the border can. So you better come to Illinois instead.
I-L-L. We will be back with you tomorrow, Thursday, 11 a.m. Eastern time, opening up that big old bag of mail. It's been a minute. We're excited to hear from you, of course. And we really love this. Those of you who watch with us live, always giving us good questions during the show, but also those of you who are showing up early and going ahead and dropping your questions in the chat, youtube.com/cover3. We're able to see those before the show starts and even be able to get to them right off the top. So come on in, join us, throw in your question live. And of course, if you want to add a question to the big old bag of mail, go give us a 5-star review. And in that review, put your mailbag question. And you can follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. You can follow him at Danny Cannell and him at Bud Elliott 3. Follow me at Chip_Patterson. Tom, thank you very much.
Thank you.
It's the UEFA Champions League on Paramount Plus. Europe's top club soccer tournament. Champions versus champions. The best teams facing off in the knockout rounds.
Magnificent!
And it all takes place
while you're filling out financial reports at work. In the middle of your day, in the middle of your week. So use that second screen. Call in sick. Do whatever you gotta do to tune in Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Nobody watches the UEFA Champions League like us. Stream every match live exclusively on Paramount Plus.